You got a good level on me? Is that
I've got
good?
A very good level on you.
Good, good.
Just perfect lucky.
All right.
You have just gathered, listeners, that the famous Lucky Asians, recent Grammy Award nominee, is with me here in Central Fremantle. Welcome back to Fremantle Shipping News, Lucky.
Good to be back.
Those who don't know all about you already should go back and listen to our early podcast where you recounted how you finished up here in Fremantle, Western Australia.
And every time I go away, I'm happier to return. What a great place.
It's amazing, isn't it? We're down in the West End, all these buildings built around the time of the 1890s gold rushes and just after. But you've been back in the land of the brave and the free.
Exactly.
Land of your birth.
My birthplace, yeah.
So tell everybody what you were doing there.
Well, the group I co-founded, Asleep at the Wheel.
It's a great name, I should say.
Yeah, and I thought of that name, and it's been good for the band because it's really kept it in the public eye. But we celebrated the 50th anniversary in 2020, and the plan was to all get together in March and record. Now, if you recall, March 2020 was COVID time.
Mm-hmm.
So I had unwisely flown over there, and I was playing a steel guitar convention in Dallas and trying to figure out how I'd catch a ride to Austin, which is 4 hours away, when Australia started closing the borders. And I couldn't get through to Qantas, so my wife Christine, who can do anything, she got through to Qantas for me. I canceled the recording, came home, did 2 weeks quarantine, I think, as you did, early days of quarantine.
Yeah, I've almost forgotten.
Yeah, in the house. No police checkup, just in the house. And the band went ahead and recorded, but the lead singer, Ray, got COVID in that first recording session, quite badly, actually. So we put it on the shelf for a few months, but then they got together again, all masked up and recorded in Austin. And if it was my song, I've got a vocal on the album, I would advise them, you know, through some studio hookup that's in real time. And they recorded it. And then I sang or played my parts onto the tracks.
Amazing what you can do.
It's incredible. And sent them to them. And we made the album, released it. The tour was in October of 21, I think, and there were no planes flying in or out of Perth, you know. So to do the tour with them, it's all my old pals and everything, it would have cost $25,000, and it would have been very uncertain as to whether I could get a plane back. And I was doing Big Heart work. I was doing a Songs for Freedom show in February, and Perth Festival opening also. So I just said, I can't go do the tour. But the album came out, and late, I think in December of 22, I heard that it had been nominated for a Grammy in a new category.
Now, this must have been just amazing for you. Was that on the radar that it would be nominated for a Grammy?
No, I had thought of it when we first recorded. I thought maybe it would be great if we got a Grammy for this. But then the word came through and I was so busy with other stuff, I kind of ignored it. And then Floyd from the band got in touch with me and he said, are you coming? I'm coming. And I was like, ooh, maybe I should. Is this an R-rated show? Can I say?
You can say.
So Ray, who's my boyhood friend and leader of the band, he said, it's the fucking Grammys. You gotta go, you know? Because you don't know. I last got nominated and won in 93. Now that's a long gap. I won in 78, in 93, and then
30 years ago.
Yeah. So there aren't many people with that kind of span that go back to 78. So I decided to go and had a great time hanging out with Floyd and with Ray and going to all the Grammy activities because...
Get you to pause there for a moment. Just remind listeners what this album was called, that Asleep at the Wheel has made, and what do people find of it when they go on to Spotify or wherever they shouldn't go?
Right, exactly. Well, the album's called Half a Hundred Years, celebrating our,
exactly,
our 50th anniversary. Yeah, think of it that way. And it's really the original members, Leroy Preston, great singer, songwriter, Chris O'Connell, who's a great singer, and getting together and saying, in the original spirit of the band, you know, going, what do you want to put on the album? And so we put it on the album. I would do my steel guitar parts, but I also played harmonica and slide guitar, like I was doing when the band first started. I became
back
kind of
then
specialized into a pedal steel player. And I wrote a song that I had been performing here with the Zydecats, and I said, Ray, this would be great for you to sing. And Ray said, no, you sing it, Lucky. So I had my first vocal on the Sleep of the Wheel album.
Well, I've heard you sing around the tracks.
I do sing now, but not, you know, how...
You weren't allowed to sing in those days.
Yeah, when you go back to a past life, so to speak, you kind of revert to what you did in that
capacity. It's like going to a class reunion. If you're the guy who told the jokes, you have to tell the jokes.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, you've described broadly the record and what you find on it. What's that genre of music called, and what classification were you nominated for at the Grammys?
Well, Asleep at the Wheel plays something called Western Swing, which is kind of like country music, but with hot solos like jazz, like swing, but on country instruments such as fiddle and steel guitar. So when we were first around in the 70s, we were the envy of all the other country bands, because they were like, you guys get to play, you know, because we were a jamming band and we were full on, full of energy. The other bands were, and here's a song that was mighty good to me, Easy Lovin'. It goes just like this, and it goes just like the record. It always goes just like this. And we were full of fire. So the album hopefully recaptures some of that. And there was a category that we would almost always be nominated for and often win, called Best Country Instrumental. But that was eliminated, because the Grammys kind of shift, you know, as music shifts.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Like the Olympics, they take out sports and bring in new ones.
That's right. So, but there was a new category called Best Americana Performance.
Best Americana? I was wondering about the Americana.
So what has happened in the past few decades is Americana has emerged as a genre separate from country music. So country music is your hard-edged, good old boy sounds, highly produced and polished, and America incorporates more folk, more left-wing attitudes. It's kind of a broader church.
I've really loved discovering Americana over the last number of years. So you're nominated for a Grammy, and who are you up against?
We're up against Brandi Carlile, who's this awesome country singer who is really into the tradition. She helped rebirth the career of a singer named Tanya Tucker.
Wow, really?
Yeah, and there's a whole video about that. So she's very supportive and in the tradition. Also openly gay, you know, which is unusual for country music. We're also against a couple of other people, but the other strong one, we thought Brandi would win because she's very hot this year. There was Bonnie Raitt, who had written a great song.
Bonnie Raitt in Americana.
Yeah. Well, it's a broad church, you know.
She's got
maybe she should go in blues, you know.
Yeah.
But she's always been a blues-based person, but able to sing a ballad or a folk song.
Certainly sing a ballad.
Yeah. And she's really in that great tradition that she would have learned by going to the coffee houses in the 60s,
right,
as I did, seeing the folk musicians, seeing the Bob Dylans, Phil Oakes, Joni Mitchell. They were playing in these tiny little places.
Amazing, isn't it?
Singing some folk songs, singing some songs that they'd made up, that they'd written, and also the blues players, the old Mississippi blues players.
Now, you fly across for the Grammys. You're taking it all in good humor, no doubt, having a good time, catching up with the guys, Floyd and Ray. And where is the Grammys held?
It's pretty confusing. They had, I would say, four different venues I experienced, right? There was a Lifetime Achievement Award in which they honored music educators, great singer Bobby McFerrin, the great jazz educator and pianist Ellis Marsalis. Very warm ceremony, you know, where there's lots of family there. And that's in a place called the Wiltshire Eben, which is a beautiful venue that has a theater.
And remind our listeners, what town are we in? What city?
Oh, this is in Los Angeles.
Amazing.
So I had never really experienced downtown Los Angeles. When Asleep at the Wheel used to play there, we usually played the Palomino Club that was in Hollywood, which is a bit further away. So we stayed in this great hotel called the Biltmore, which was built in 1923.
Yeah, yeah.
And just opulence, jazz age opulence, maintained, except the rooms are a little bit funky, so it's good. It's not that expensive.
And there are other awards being held in other...
So not simultaneously. So we went to this Lifetime Achievement Award. Then we go to the nominees reception, which is where I got my nominees medal. It's a beautiful buffet. There's photos. There's music. There's hanging out, essentially. So that's on the Saturday, February 4th. On Sunday, February 5th, there's a Grammy Award, the first part of the Grammy Awards that isn't on television. It's on YouTube. It's on online television. And LA has like a sort of complex of three different buildings. There's the Microsoft something. There's the crypto.com, you know, all these branded with big corporations. So I think we're in the Microsoft Center. And that's where our nomination was. It was the pre-free-to-air televised section. And just with some great performances, beautifully staged. And so we finished that, and we're kind of herded to crypto.com, which is actually the Los Angeles Lakers stadium, basketball stadium. So it's this huge basketball stadium that goes up about 10 stories. And there's this elaborate stage set up, and about 50 stagehands, you know, it's split in two. So they're setting up one stage during a commercial break. So during the commercial breaks, everything kind of goes dead, you know,
it gets ready for the next thing. Yeah.
And Trevor Noah from The Daily Show emceeing, as well as Billy Crystal in parts. Very slickly produced show. You know, that's the one that Harry Styles plays at. Bad Bunny made this incredible entrance with a marching band and dancers of about 50 people. You know, it's all about big scale.
It's like a presidential campaign.
Entertainment, yeah, very big and very impressive.
And did you get to play, or you just had to stand there and...
No, we didn't play. We just took it all in. Big, you know, for television. Mm. And the Grammys are run by the National Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences, which is a group that looks after musicians and music. So they're about furthering music education, looking after musicians in need, because it's easy to fall through the cracks in America. Mm. So they use the Grammys as an opportunity to raise awareness about music and to raise money for their campaigns.
Now, at some point, somebody, Billy Crystal or somebody, says, we come to the Americana category of the Grammys, these are the nominees, sleep at the wheel, and away they go.
And away they go.
And somebody opens an envelope, I assume.
They do, yeah.
And what happens?
Well, it's not Brandi Carlile, but surprise of surprise, it's Bonnie Raitt.
Bonnie Raitt!
And as Bonnie walks to the stage, she gets a standing ovation, the first of the night.
Wow.
So it's like respect for a person who has done such great work. She has helped so many
people. It's been
people
a lifetime out. In music.
It's a lifetime in music of great integrity. You know. So.
Well, that's lovely
for
you all, really. But for you guys, to be pipped by Bonnie Raitt.
Exactly. You couldn't lose to anyone more deserving or better.
So from what you're saying about the Grammys, I mean, most people know it, lucky, as a television event or YouTube event, if you've tuned in for whatever it is you want to particularly see. But you've started to describe it in terms that makes it sound like the Fremantle Seafarers Club, that not only they're providing some entertainment for people, but they're also looking after people. They're interested in education, you've said. It sounds like a university for musicians.
A benevolent society.
A benevolent society.
And that stuff isn't interesting. People are like, did you see Harry Styles? Did you see Beyonce? Which is, but that all helps.
Yes.
But, like, my attitude is music is a very hard line of work to be in. And if anyone can make it work for them, that's great. It's great for the whole community of musicians.
And the Grammys Award enables all of that to come together. It provides focus on musicians.
That's right.
You pointing out, a little bit like people go on the pro tennis circuit, they're not all Roger Federer or Novak Djokovic.
That's right. Yeah, it's a big community of people. And that's why it's so great. People went, Bonnie Raitt not only won that Best Americana Performance, but she won the Song of the Year for the same song. So people were outraged because Bonnie Raitt wouldn't have sold a lot of records. But the Academy is based on voting. You know, it's not based on sales. Anyone who buys a membership to it to support the Academy is a voter.
Wow.
So this year they went, that's a great song. Bonnie should win that for Song of the Year.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? It's a bit like selecting people for the symphony orchestra. They come to audition and they should go behind a dark curtain.
That's right. So it was really, the other interesting thing about the Grammys is it was really the year of restoring the balance. Like African American people make a disproportionately high amount of music that sells to people, you know? Mm-hmm. But before they weren't really honored, but they were on an equal footing and in the crowd, you know, on the stage, Hispanic people as well, people of various genders, you know, mm-hmm. transgender people. So it was really the year for that. And you kind of looked at the Grammys and you went, what does the rest of America think of this? You know, you've got someone proudly proclaiming their transgenderdom, you know, where in North Carolina they're trying to ban, you know, bathrooms that allow for that.
Well, we will come back and talk about the US on another occasion. We don't have enough time today.
No.
But what were your impressions on arriving in LA? I mean, it's a different place again, I suppose one should say, not entirely representative of the whole of America.
True.
Was there a buzz? Was the place alive?
It was quite alive. I never stayed in downtown LA. It's downtown LA is, you know, people say it's dangerous. There are a lot of homeless people there. There are districts down from the hotel, like the Toy District, Japanese Town, Jewelry District, Fashion District. And the two prevalent smells are urine, because homeless people got no place to go, and marijuana.
Marijuana is legal. Mixture.
Recreational marijuana is legal there.
Yes.
You know, yeah. The stores are everywhere, but you know, I found it interesting how the homeless people, the answer to homelessness is to build housing. It's been proven time and time again, and yet these people, a lot of them veterans, because there's a VA hospital down the coast, are out there, and I mean, Fremantle has a lot of homeless people, doesn't it? Mm. And yet it never feels as dangerous and confronting as the U.S. Mm. But maybe the U.S. is a more violent society. Mm. So, L.A. is great. I went to the Broad Museum, saw Disney Hall by Frank Gehry.
Yeah, amazing architect. And you're back home.
Now,
what's been going on in the world of locations around Australia? You often make your way to Tasmania and do things like
that. I do. I've just been there. So I'm an associate member of a great organization called Big Heart.
Big Heart is just an amazing group doing great work.
They do amazing work. And they are headquartered in the northwest of Tasmania, but they do work all over the country. And often it's in communities that need some attention. For instance, they worked with the Namajira family and created a play that helped in the Namajira family reclaiming Albert's artworks. They didn't have ownership, right? So that was the campaign. So when the people of Roebourne heard that they'd done that, they said, "Oh, maybe you should come and see what you can do here." And Big Heart, you know, plonked some people down in Roebourne maybe 13 years ago, and they made a play called Hip Bone Sticking Out. They did a digital cartoon, and they started doing music there. And that's where I got involved. I came up to help with songwriting in the prison and in the community, and eventually became musical director of a show, which on the advice of the Pat family, became Songs for Peace. That's what the show was called in Roebourne. Mm. So it started out a variety show where Archie Roach would come in, various singers, Theona Counselor, Emma Donovan, they'd sing their set. But eventually, the body of work coming from Roebourne and Roebourne Prison became so strong that everyone who came in as a musician or singer would sing that work, you know, or create new work with the community, which is what Vicky Thorne from The Waifs has done in the past couple of years. Songs for Peace. So the idea was, in the wake of the terrible death of that young man, we create and think about songs for peace. And
people will recall, perhaps there are some even today who don't, or they're too young. Lucky that John Pat died in custody, and there were major inquiries in Australia, and we still every other week, month, year come back to the recommendations of that Royal Commission for trying to make life in prisons better if people have to be in prison.
That's right. So this Song for Peace, we got invited by the city of Melville to put that on for them, and we've done that two times.
This is at Point Walter.
At Point Walter.
It's a magical setting. It's done in the late afternoon, early evening, into the night. You've got the Derbal Yerrigan behind you, great stage. The amphitheatre slopes up.
Yeah.
People have got a barbecue going and brought something to eat, and you and the team are playing and songs for freedom these days.
It's great. So why not Songs for Peace? Well, the project evolved and we started to think about what the we're we're writing about what peace feels like. What does freedom feel like?
Mm.
And how can we increase it? And there was one issue that jumped out, and that was the unbelievably highly disproportionate rates of incarceration for Aboriginal children, right?
Mm.
50% out of 2 or 3% of the population. Things that could be made better just by simply raising the criminal age of responsibility.
Mm. Which it seems politicians, at least locally, are reluctant to do.
Yeah, I'm like to Mark McGowan, like, you've got all this political capital, you know, why don't you actually make a stand for something?
I can only assume they don't want to.
Maybe he actually believes that.
Mm.
I don't know, but so the show has evolved into that. So we have songs like Songs of Freedom, Fighting for Freedom. Fighting for Freedom was written by women prisoners of Roeburn Jail. And we just played that at Mona Foma in Hobart. We opened Mona Foma. Now, it's quite significant because when this show goes somewhere, there isn't just one Aboriginal tribe in Australia. There are many nations, there are many language groups, 60, 100. So wherever we go, Nullama Man, Songman Patrick Turnside goes ahead of us and he talks to the local people. So I've been with him to South New South Wales where we had an amazing workshop. He brings artifacts, knowledge, because culture in the Pilbara is relatively intact. In Tasmania, we speak with the Palawa people who have a big problem with going on the site of Mona because of the way artifacts were handled there when it was built.
Right.
Because of Patrick's diplomacy, they agree to come with us there. Not only that, they meet us at the airport. They see us off at the airport.
Oh,
they see us at the concert. They do a ceremony, a cleansing ceremony on the grounds of Mona.
And you know you've been on their country.
Yeah.
Mm.
So we're visiting their country. Mm. It's very significant. And for white people, it's a little bit different because I'm always, you know, my training is, who are the best people for the job? What's the most efficient way of doing it? With black people, it's more like, whose country is this? You know, we have to ask permission. We have to get all the permissions and do what they say.
Imagine if that had happened here in Wallalup and up the road in Perth and beyond when Governor Stirling arrived here in 1829, asked some permissions and took some guidance. Didn't happen. But we're starting to do it, Lucky. Do you get that feeling?
Well, it's slowly getting there. I mean, Angus Smith, who is on the album, he's the manager of my mind, he said I was playing a concert in Perth and these Noongar fellas were saying, hey, Angus, let's take back the land from the white people. And Angus said, my mother told me that the land doesn't belong to anyone. You just look after the land and the land looks after you. So this is where I arrived a couple of years ago. I thought, here's a culture that has survived for 60,000 years and we're telling them they should assimilate, right? Like imagine if ancient Egypt had been around for 60,000 years and some barbarians came and took it over and just said, be like us, you're primitive, you know?
It's an important perspective. People forget the point you just made, that this culture's been here so long and it's been through thick and thin. There were people who believed Aboriginal people, for example, in Western Australia, were going to just die out. And of course, it didn't happen, it hasn't happened, and it's not happening. And in fact, we're being enriched, as I said, by Indigenous culture. And and events like Songs for Freedom down on the foreshore at Point Walter a really important part of it. When's it happening? How many musicians?
It's happening Sunday, March 5th at 5 o'clock. We've got a core band of, let's see, drums, bass, a couple of guitars, myself on pedal steel, keyboards, and then we've got numerous singers, like a shifting cast of singers. People who have been to Roebourne, as experienced the cultural hub that is there. Mm-hmm. This is the other thing about the project, is the narrative, how even when it's well-meaning, it's Roebourne, troubled town, and my rejoinder is always Roebourne, cultural hub.
Well, you have to go to those places. Roebourne's an interesting place to come to. It's got its own European history, of course. It's got its own ancient Nalama history there. Mm. Bunjima people came down from the hill, so did the Injibandi people.
Yeah.
They all, for many years, lived on the reserve there. It's an amazing story.
And that film, people. Exile in the Kingdom, spells it out very well. And interestingly, when we were doing the album notes, someone suggested, after the Pilbara strike, the Aboriginal people lived on the reserve in great privation. And one of the people who had lived there said, no, that's not right. We had good times there.
Yeah. Well, they did. I mean, people, as I've always understood it and were told, kept in their groups. And a lot of the people, of course, a lot of the old Aboriginal generations going back wanted their kids to be educated.
Yeah.
They all started to leave from various pastoral stations because they wanted their kids to be educated.
And it's in Aboriginal ways.
Well, and in
Western
ways.
Yeah, Whitefellow ways, yeah.
They wanted it both ways.
And
that's the beauty of the system. There's a famous law ground up there called Woodstock, of all places.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's been running law business as long as anyone can remember.
Woodbrook, I should say.
Yeah. Woodstock.
Well, yeah, yeah. Ceremony was on while we were doing Songs for Peace this year.
Yeah.
So it's very strong. One of the songs says strong in culture and history, So I'm there to learn. I'm also there to offer my expertise in producing an album that sounds good, in helping produce a stage show that's really tight, because we'll probably take this to Sydney Opera House. We'll probably take this to Llewellyn Hall in Canberra.
Wow.
Because it's a very important show. I did an interview with David Zampatti yesterday, and he said what Big Art is doing in Roebourne is the most important art that's happening in Australia at the moment.
Look, it's important for so many reasons, not the least of them just a national cultural perspective. This is Western Australia. This is Roebourne. This is where John Pat grew up.
Yeah, yeah.
This is music that, in different ways around Western Australia, people on the other side of the country are vaguely familiar with sometimes. And suddenly you take something like this with everything that's behind it, say to the Sydney Opera House, people will love it in Sydney.
I hope so. It's a very powerful show. We played with Kutcha Edwards, who's a great Aboriginal singer, cousin to Jack Charles, a man of like huge spirit. He commands a stage. And I said, Kutcha, because he'd been in Black Armband. I said, Kutcha, how's this different from Black Armband? And he said, well, this show is about one thing. It's about the children in prison. And that kind of perception, makes everyone go forward in the same direction. And when we were in Tasmania, the Commissioner for Children spoke after Kutcha sang, and she was visibly moved. She said, I do not want to live in a country that locks up children like this.
Lucky, on that note, a very important note, we'll finish this discussion. People are going to flock down to Songs for Freedom. the Reuben show at Point Walter. They're going to see the show before it goes on tour. It's going to be a great night, but that message, really, that Indigenous kids should not be locked up in the way they have been locked up, where most people in the community, it seems to me, regret the way the authorities have handled the locking up of kids at places like Bencher Hill. Mm. I'm sure we're going to hear more of it.
Yeah, Unlock the Future is the website to go to learn more about it. Unlockthefuture.org, I think.
Or we'll go and do that straight away. Thanks for meeting.
Thanks, Michael. Always a pleasure.